B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
The man that was the lucky man amongst us to be in Milwaukee for that game, from Inquirer.com, our friend Marcus Hayes. Good morning, Marcus.
You ever been to Milwaukee?
I have been to Milwaukee. I have, yes.
And why would you use the words lucky to have been in Milwaukee in this sequence?
Because I was in Milwaukee in early January, and I think I froze the second I walked outside. How was the weather this time around?
It was actually, it was 4 when I landed. Friday morning, but it actually got pretty nice. It wasn't bad.
Okay.
And I'm a cold weather guy. I grew up about, I don't know, 20 minutes from the Canadian border in New York. So
okay.
That stuff, it makes me nostalgic when I'm that cold.
Yeah, I think I had a nice meal at Ted's Steakhouse, I think it is.
I went to, what was it, Tenuta's Italian restaurant outside of Milwaukee with Keith Pompey. We ate at the bar, and it was spectacular.
Very nice.
That's the only food I've had. Yeah, actually, Milwaukee's been pretty gentrified, and it's kind of a foodie city now. It's a pretty good place.
Yeah, I will say this. If you want to make a road trip, any Sixers fans out there, maybe Eagles fans go to Green Bay like this past year. Milwaukee's about 2 hours, 2.5 hours south. Nice little spot. Chicago, Milwaukee's not too far either. But about that game itself, Marcus, and you've been pretty on point with Joel Embiid and Sixers ownership and Ben Simmons and Brett Brown. You have a great article on Inquirer.com right now, as a matter of fact. I was just reading through it earlier. It seems like this Sixers team, which was surrounded by praise to start out the year, is now surrounded by turmoil and skepticism. I don't know which way to look with this Sixers team, especially with Ben Simmons and this injury. But to focus on Joel Embiid to start off with, this is a guy that said best player in the world, and then 17 points, 11 rebounds against the actual best player in the world right now, Giannis Antetokounmpo. What are you to make of Joel Embiid after that performance, after calling himself out before it?
Well, I will say a couple things. Number one, Kawhi Leonard's the best player in the world. Number two, Joel Embiid played like the best player in the world 2 days before and against the Nets, yeah, when they were played without Ben Simmons, and the Nets had, I don't know, I think they'd won 3 or 4. They'd beaten Toronto. You know, they're not a great team, and the Sixers were playing at home. But Joel Embiid played probably the best all-around game I'd ever seen him play, owned the fourth quarter and the overtime. That said, he has the capacity to be the best player in the world. He's, you know, 25 pounds and about 6 post moves from being there. So, you know, I think that he says things like that to sort of frame his next commercial drop. I think he had a Mountain Dew commercial drop the next day, and I mean, I'm pretty sure he had a Hulu spot that was pretty hot. I think he does it essentially to market himself and his, you know, his brand, saying things like that because he's just too inconsistent a player for that to be taken seriously. And yeah, Giannis is he's a special beast. But you know, the best part about that game in Milwaukee is they had a very precise scouting report on how to defend Giannis Antetokounmpo, and it worked in the first half. Joel Embiid got 2 quick fouls in the third quarter, but it would have been interesting to see how that game played out had Joel Embiid been able to play the middle of the third quarter.
Do you think Joel Embiid will ever be the type of player that will actually take his talent more seriously? Do you think that's the problem, or do you think he is more about being the show than he is being the MVP candidate?
Right now, he's clearly more about being the show and enjoying being young and, you know, like every young athlete. And he's more than a young athlete. He's kind of a Superman. He's unique. There's really never been anybody this big and this skilled and this talented in NBA history. And that includes Shaq and Wilt, who, you know, is a different era for Wilt. But he's just a different being. And I think that impedes him sometimes because he doesn't think he has to work as hard as a Kawhi Leonard or LeBron James. It's terrifying to think how good he would be if he did that. But, you know, he's young and he's having fun and he's rich. And he thinks he's good enough at this point.
Yeah, that's the worrisome part, because I know even as good as he is now, as good as he can be now, he can be even better if he finds the motivation in just playing the game as opposed to the outside noise. And I wasn't one that jumped on him with the shush moment, and I wasn't one that jumped on him for the, you know, fans got to be better, I got to be better, we all got to be better. But if you don't put up, especially in a game against the Bucks, then that's where I'll fall in line with the majority of people that'll say, dude, shut the hell up and play. He needs to be motivated when the ball goes in the air for tip-off, not because of some tweet or some statement he made.
Well, that's true. And, you know, you probably shouldn't need to be motivated by, you know, your own claims. But I will say this. I mean, Joel played his ass off the first half of that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was playing hard. He was the only reason they didn't get blown out in the first half. He was, I mean, they were 2-for-16 from three, and they trailed by 6 at halftime. So that was all Joel Embiid, despite only having 11 points and I think 6 rebounds at the half. Had he not been who he was, playing hard and with Ben leaving after 5 minutes, it would have been a, it would have, you know, people would have turned off their TVs at 9:30. That said, you know, his first foul was his first foul in the second half was specious, but his second foul, you know, you can't foul Giannis going to the hoop a minute into the third quarter, you know, when he's got you. You just got to let him go, and he knew it. He wound up on the floor, he looked up at the ceiling and said, "You know what? I just lost us any chance to win this game, not because of lack of effort, but just, you know, a mistake made in the moment. You got to let that guy go in that moment at home." You know, who cares if he took 6 steps to get there? He got there, and the whistle's on you.
Speaking with Marcus Hayes, Inquirer.com. Marcus, how concerned are you about Ben Simmons at this point?
I don't know. I mean, he's in really good shape. This has been an issue that he's had chronically for about a year and a half now, and he takes, you know, he sort of takes care of the issue. I think he's probably done a little bit too much this season as a whole, and it looks bad. It's bad optics coming out of the All-Star game and not playing because you hurt your back in practice and then, you know, missing the second game. And now it looks like it's going to be at least a week or two from my sort of gut instinct. I mean, the thing that was alarming to me was, I mean, I saw him shoot around and talked to him, and he seemed pretty fine. I mean, he was shooting free throws. He wasn't walking gingerly. I walked him all the way to the bus, talked about his back. The thing about it for me is when the game began, and out, you know, after pregame warmers, when the game began, we were told he was going to be going back to the locker room during the game to get treatment when he wasn't in the game. So don't be alarmed; he'll be back and forth. And then at the first time out, they put a back brace on to stand there, and I was like, "Whoa, that's pretty concerning." So I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see him again until after the West Coast trip. I think it's something like L.A., Sacramento.
Golden State.
Yeah, you got a bad back. There's no sense of traveling with a team if you're not going to play. You can always fly out there in the middle of it. But, you know, they really need him for this ridiculously easy stretch run that they have so they can sort of get some cohesion defensively, especially on the road, and figure out who they are offensively with Glenn Robinson III. And Alec Burks and sort of being incorporated into this, you know, up and down Furkan Korkmaz bench. So I wouldn't play him for that. I think of a 7-game stretcher, I'd be like, you know what, I'll see you at game, you know, 18 or 19 or whatever it is.
Marcus, if it is something longer than, you know, what you're hoping here on the 7-game or whatever, we talked about motivation for Joel Embiid. Could this be something if you know, Ben Simmons is out, safe, God forbid, for the rest of the season? Could it be something that elevates his game because it is that outside motivation that he, you know, craves?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no conflict that I've witnessed between Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. There's strife and turmoil, and I think it, you know, sort of goes through the coach and the GM and the team structure and things like that, but these guys aren't enemies. So let me frame it that way, Bob, and I think you know that. The reality is, though, these guys are each big enough stars to carry any team, anytime. So I think what we might see over the next 7 games is this become Joel Embiid's team, the way that the Lakers and old Bucks were Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's team, the way that Hakeem Olajuwon was everything, I mean, absolutely everything for the Houston Rockets. So, and those are really the only two comps, because Tim Duncan always had a better supporting cast. You know, Shaq never won anything by himself, and you could argue he wasn't the most complete player on any of his good teams. So Joel Embiid at this point, in this 7-game stretch, really 9-game stretch because of the last 2 games without Ben, can sort of cement himself as, you know, the fulcrum of this team. And he's never really been in a position to do that because Ben never misses games and he misses tons of games. So this is kind of an interesting, you know, sort of 2-week window from my perspective. I think it's going to be about a 2-week window where Joel Embiid, who is relatively healthy, he said he had a sore back as well, but if he's relatively healthy and he's playing at this level, and he had a really good first half and he had a really good 5 quarters against the Nets coming out of the All-Star break, he can cement this as his franchise. Because 2 weeks ago, you know, 3 weeks ago, the conversation was Joel's not always committed. He's not in shape. Maybe he should be the guy we trade instead of Ben Simmons.
Marcus, what's the biggest difference from the team that plays in South Philadelphia to the team that plays anywhere else?
Second half focus. I mean, and that's on Brett. They come out flat in the second half. They don't make the kinds of adjustments or prepare for the kind of adjustments the other team's going to make against their defensive front. And that, to me, is very fixable. I don't know that they have the type of three-point shooters. If you look at Tobias Harris and Furkan Korkmaz's splits, home versus road shooting threes, that's the issue. They don't shoot threes well on the road. They shoot the most threes. So that's problem A. I don't know if that's fixable. But the bigger problem is they collapse defensively, usually in the third quarter, against good teams with good systems who have three or four different ways to go at halftime. And you know as well as I do, 82 games, the teams come in at about 40 games, you've got your toolbox. You are who you are. And you've got four or five adjustments, sort of stock adjustments that you make for second half. And it's up to the Sixers and Brett Brown to understand which ones you're going to face. If the game is tight, or if the other, or if the home team is trailing, they have not adjusted to the adjustments, and that's all on Brett Brown and his staff.
Speaking with Marcus Hayes, Inquirer.com. So in the time, about maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks here without Ben Simmons, you said you wouldn't be surprised if you didn't see him until after the road trip, which is West Coast trip, which is March 11th, I believe, is their last game on that trip. What does your starting five look like? Is Glenn Robinson the third and Alec Burks, are they all of a sudden now in the starting lineup?
You know, the conversation, I had this conversation with Team Pompey at the Inquirer after the Bucks game. The conversation around, you know, Joel and Al Horford can't play together, always assumed that Ben Simmons is going to be on the court. If you take Ben Simmons off the court, is that still a valid conversation? Is Al Horford still a bench player? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Instead of three guys you have who are ball stoppers, where the ball goes and it just dies, you only have two, assuming that the replacement, whether it's Alec Burks or, from my perspective, it looks like it's going to be Shake. You know, if you lose your point guard, Josh Richardson can't play point and two. Howell Neto is, the most recent, you know, net zero. And I don't think Alec Burks is the kind of guy you can say. Number one, you deplete your bench. You got him to be offense off your bench, so now you no longer have offense off your bench. And I'm not sure that Shake Milton, Shoot the Nuts, isn't a more valuable player against, you know, the other team's point guard than Alec Burks. So I'm not sure that Al Horford becomes a non-option at this point, especially after a game or two without Ben Simmons, which I don't think – I just don't think that they can play without – a third viable, dependable player. And Al Horford does a lot of things well that don't include scoring. But again, I mean, I'm not sure what it looks like. It's probably Shake at the point, but I'm not sure that Al Horford can't start for this team instead of maybe Glenn Robinson third. It'll be interesting to see how it goes over the next 2 weeks.
It's so weird without Ben Simmons, and it's so weird to see Shake Milton be a starter and then not a starter, and then Howell Neto step up against the Nets and be your starter, and then Howell Neto only gets 6 minutes of garbage time against the Bucks while Alec Burks comes in. Brett Brown's obviously a tough guy to figure out. You're talking about the road woes in the second half and Brett not keeping him focused. How can you explain either Brett's offense or his rotation, really? His rotation off the bench. Does it make any sense to you?
I believe it was 2015. I wrote a column saying this franchise needs a real point guard at some point. A guy who can play somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes, take care of the ball, hit a 15 to 25 footer. They've never had that guy. Zero times have they had that guy. You can argue Ish Smith was that guy, but he's Ish Smith. They still have not had a real point guard in this franchise since the process began. To me, it's always been about personnel. And Brett's partly culpable for that. He was the quote-unquote GM for a while. And he tries to make, you know, silk purses out of sow's ears. I think he overthinks things sometimes. But frankly, I mean, all this goes away if you'd had a true backup point guard. Or just a true point guard. Ben Simmons is not a true point guard. For me, it's more about team construction than anything else. A guy who can defend a little bit, shoot a little bit, stay healthy, and run a team. So, you know, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's been my chief criticism and concern and reason for lack of optimism for this team since really, what was it, 2017-18, when they started looking like an actual basketball team.
Last thing for you, Marcus. Marcus Hayes, TheEnquirer.com. What is the Sixers team right now? Let's say after the road trip, March 11th, they come back. After that, you have so many games left in the season. What do you think this Sixers team is? Is it a first-round playoff exit team, a second-round playoff exit team? Where do you put their cap at?
Well, it kind of depends on how things settle. I mean, if they face Miami in the first round, which is a very good possibility, especially if they face Miami in the first round with no home court, I think they're probably a first-round exit team. However, we didn't know with, 20, how many games left? 25?
Right now, 25.
Yeah, with 25 games left, we had no idea what the Sixers were going to be 2 years ago. We didn't know what they were going to be last year. And we certainly don't know what they're going to be this year with their point guard injured and really no offensive identity, even with a two-loss home record. We don't really know what this team is. But again, and we probably won't know until the last 2 weeks of the season, assuming Ben comes back, he's healthy, and they sort of integrate Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burks a little bit more. It's really kind of like Groundhog Day because, you know, if it wasn't Bellinelli and Ilyasova, it was Tobias Harris and Ilyasova. And now it's no Ben and two trade deadline guys, but you're not going to know until the last couple of weeks. My gut is they get a three, they win the first, they lose the second, and we have a new coach.
That, I think, either way, I think barring a finals appearance, I think that's where the Sixers team's going to end up. Marcus Hayes, Inquirer.com, ink stained dreck. Did I get it right?
Wrench.
Wrench.
Ink stained wrench.
Damn, oh, every time. Every time.
Ink stained wrench with no W, just like your life.
Marcus, be careful of the snowfall outside of the, you know, the surrounding suburbs. You know, I know this winter could be getting harsh in not too long.
I'll just call your dad and come over and trouble for you.
Marcus, you're the man. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.